Definitely. By the way, to prep the audience for Ray Pete tomorrow, they might go back to your January 1st, 2014 show and go about 40 minutes in, and from 40 to 44 minutes, he gives the straight poop on PUFAs, where he mentions yellow fat disease for the first time.
I'm going to listen to that before the show. So our first show we did with him is what you're saying, our first show?
The first one on January 1st, 2014, not the January 24th, 2019.
Gotcha. And then go 40 minutes in, and he'll give a little a serenade on PUFAs.
On the PUFAs. And from 28 minutes to 35 minutes, he gives a great description of how to eat grains successfully. And why they're bad and why they're good, et cetera. 28 to 35 minutes into the first hour on both of those.
Cool. On the first hour, both. Yeah, that'd be a good thing. We've been starting to put some things up on YouTube. Maybe we'll edit that out and do a little PUFA grain special for YouTube and get some more people to find Ray Pete. Good. Well done.
The pivotal moment in my life is 40 minutes and 55 seconds into that first hour when I heard the word yellow fat disease and said, what the heck is that?
Oh, I see. That's your first. Did it go back then? I mean, this was back 5 years ago when you first heard about yellow fat?
Well, before that, I was clueless about yellow fat disease, and I had no idea. You know, he's talking about omega-3s, and I wasn't that interested.
Uh-huh.
But then when I looked it up, and I kept looking it up and found it in cats and found it in dogs and found it in crocodiles and found it in minks and found it in every animal in the book. I haven't found it in bears yet, interesting enough. The only one that seems to be immune or the research isn't done is on bears. But every other animal in the world, from A to Z, from horses to zebras, whatever, horses are particularly susceptible to it, and they all get it.
And they get it from mainly... Again, the kind of foods, flax.
Omega-3s. What's that? Omega-3s.
Omega-3s. Anything with high omega-3.
Saturated fatty acids. Now, the omega-6 does do other things. I'll take people's words that it causes cancer and things like that. But I can't find evidence of that. You know, that I'll leave up to the chemist. But yellow fat disease, all you have to do is put that in, and it keeps coming up, highly unsaturated fatty acids. Now, they'll try and put it off on rancid fats and other fats, but if you keep on looking, all you find is the more highly unsaturated the acids is, like DHA and EPA and ALA, then you find the villain.
I'll be done. Isn't that amazing?
It amazed me. Believe me, I never thought I'd be writing books against omega-3 fatty acids. Now, I always was suspicious because when I managed a health food store in the local area here, it started to become popular. And I thought, so they don't have any heart disease. Then I read an article. They don't have any heart disease because they live into their 30s. They don't have time to develop it. And so then I always was suspicious of DHA. And though I still would recommend cod liver oil on limited bases because Emmanuel Ravisi said you don't develop an adrenal defense against cod liver oil, because I already knew about this before Ray Pete, until 6 weeks. So I figured it was safe to get the vitamin A and the D a natural way, to take a little cod liver oil for a couple of weeks, you know, buy a small bottle, really good one that isn't micellized and odorized and every kind of fancy thing and lemonized and all that. Though I didn't care for the taste of it much, but I did indulge until Ray Pete. Then I realized I don't want any of that stuff.
Oh, so you don't even, so you're not a fan of even doing it on short term, a week or so?
No, because I get A and D in other places. I get plenty of D from the sun, and I get plenty of A from the vegetables and fresh foods we get, because we don't eat the processed foods. Pretty much like Jack LaLanne said, if it's in a box, if man made it, don't eat it.
Yeah, man made it, don't eat it.
Ellen, if it grows out of the ground, then eat it. Unless it's a GMO, of course. That's changed since Jack left us.
So now you guys are just eating mostly just vegetables is what you eat, huh?
Fruit mostly. Uh-huh. And, you know, we buy everything at the farmer's market. We're exceptionally lucky. But thanks to creative people like the guy in Alliance, Nebraska, you know, that's excellent. People can get fresh food. And the only way you're going to win after – against Monsanto. It's not going to Marine Court. I mean, that's a, once you go behind that banister, you're in their territory. You're in Monsanto's territory. And if you notice, Bayer stock has raised precipitously, as I predicted last year, that, yeah, they were going to go down. It was all a ruse. And now Bayer's going to be making tons of money thanks to Monsanto. And they definitely kept the Monsanto trademark name, 2019 Monsanto. You can look it up yourself. They're making tons of money, and court won't stop them. But growing our own food and buying at farmers' market, that will stop them.
Here's Ellen. Are the old-fashioned mustard plasters that used to be used for respiratory congestion effective? If so, how do they work?
Pressure. Pressure is very important. It's actually tied in with what we call the fourth chakra, barometric pressure. That's why you hear old-timers saying, my knee is hurting.
Yeah.
We're going to get rain tomorrow. And potatoes can tell the pressure of the weather in the dark, in a cave, in a pressurized box through other strange means. So, yeah, just putting pressure on something or holding it gently can actually heal it. The human hands have an energy and a heat energy that if they hold the area rather than the plaster, you even have better results. But heat and plaster work well. Like my friend, Frank Broski, with the resin plasters, you know, making the molds and everything like that. That feels good when your foot is feels like it's on fire while you're making a mold of it.
Yeah, yeah. 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. So if you are, if you're doing a lot of fruit, so you don't much, I guess it doesn't sound like you're much be concerned about blood sugar, fasting blood sugar, or just your A1C over 3 or 4 months. As some people conjecture that if you eat too much fruit, you know, your blood sugar could get too high. That doesn't seem to be a concern for you.
In the 1830s, William Budd would cure diabetes by giving 8 ounces of white sugar per day and 4 ounces of honey and cure diabetes. If my father had known about William Budd, he would be alive today. But he died of diabetes by being off of sugar.
What do you think that was about?
You know, because we need sugar. You know, when William Budd, he did the math. He said, you're urinating out all that sugar. If you eat protein, you're going to be burning your muscle to make the sugar. So all we'll do is replace exactly the amount of sugar that's going in the toilet, and then at least they'll stay alive. So it is not the cure for diabetes. Diabetes, again, goes back to yellow fat disease. As strange as it sounds, I know they have that saying that if you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. But diabetes does have a lot to do with omega-3 fatty acids. Ask Ray Pete about it tomorrow.
I'll be darned. Diabetes and omega-3. Yeah.
He'll give you the straight skinny on diabetes. And to Ray Pete, there's only one type of diabetes. Type 2 diabetes is not even diabetes. And ask him for those details.
Yeah.
I'll be listening.
Yeah, it's funny. My Ayurvedic doc, he tells me all the time, you know, we chat and he goes, yeah, eat fruit. It's good for you. Just eat a lot of fruit. He does. He says that all the time to me.
You know, I think my diabetes is called the English gout, and there's so much diabetes in India.
Yeah.
It's because of all the complex carbohydrates that they add in it. Often the sugar gets blamed, and actually look at all the additives. When people used to go into a place like Starbucks and order cupcakes and muffins and things like that, I would pull out my little bag of white sugar, even back 10, 20 years ago, and start eating out of the white sugar, and they say, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm eating sugar. You're obviously not craving the sugar. You're craving the additives in the muffins and the cupcakes and the donuts. But I just eat the white sugar, and it's only 30 cents for a box of it.
So,
well, you're paying $5 for your little muffin.
who were the folks that invaded Hawaii and stole all the land and created pure cane sugar from Hawaii? Who was that company? What?
Was it Spreckles? Was it? That wasn't it. Forget the name of the company, but yeah, they definitely grew it there. And of course, beet sugar in Louisiana and Colorado and places like that. Now, unfortunately, all beet sugar is
GMO.
GMO.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Because beet sugar, if you take the sugar beet and eat it up in Colorado at high altitude, it actually makes it weeds out the deuterium, so you get low deuterium without having to go drink glacial water.
Yeah, so I guess sugar cane, pure cane sugar from Hawaii, would be a better choice than GMO beets, right?
Definitely, since it's all beets now. So that's why I used to have the beet sugar at night and have the cane sugar in the middle of the day by timing. But now I prefer to eat the sugar at the wrong time.
According to this, C&H Sugar Company produces and sells cane sugar and molasses in the United States. Company offers cane sugar in various types, grades, blah, blah, blah. Let's move on here. C&H Sugar markets its products through retail stores, okay. The company was founded in 1906, based out of Pleasant Hill, California. As of August 2005, C&H Sugar Company operates a subsidiary of American Sugar Refining. But I thought they were out of Hawaii originally, weren't they?
Sugar has been around for a while, but they realized that Hawaii was the perfect place to grow both sugar and pineapples.
Oh, here it is. California and Hawaiian Sugar Company, C&H Sugar. Oh, that's what C&H stands for. Come on. California and Hawaiian Sugar Company is an American sugar processing distributor originally organized as a cooperative in 1921. And California and Hawaii. Yeah, I mean, it's a thing. It's a Hawaiian-California thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And Louisiana grows a lot of sugarcane. And, of course, I believe the Caribbean and probably all over Indonesia and places now. It's a major crop. And, of course, at one time it was it made New York City. Slavery and sugar made New York City. That isn't generally recognized. They always blame the South for slavery and don't blame New York City.
No kidding. It was sugar and, yeah.
Yep. A lot of things, you know, we get the term dirty copper because of the great hunger of the 1840s. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know that. The Irish, during the great hunger of the 1840s, it was also called the potato famine, the English wouldn't help the Irish, so 1 million died in 1 year and 2 million evacuated. And so when they formed the Gangs of New York, there was a movie made about it, just before the Civil War, when to try and control the Irish, they wore police uniforms. The Irish started killing the policemen because they reminded them of the English bobbies who they hated, and they started calling them dirty copper and copper. And that's right. Where we get the term cop today.
I'll be done. That's right. Yeah. Here's one. Let's see.
In Hawaii, our children grow up with the sugar cane. C&H.
C&H.
Pure cane sugar.
Pure cane sugar.
From Hawaii.
Hawaii.
Growing in the sun.
There you go.
You know, they actually cure cancer with sugar, and they actually say that people that sugar feeds cancer, and actually it can be the opposite. Ask Ray Pete about that, too. There's been cases of giving injections of sugar and curing cancer.
No kidding. Who? Not the miracle medical mafia model people, but...
not at all.
Just a kind of alternative docs have played with using sugar for cancer cells?
Yep. There's a lot of money behind keto these days, by the way. I went to the hippie food store, and they have this huge book on getting started in keto that I wonder how much it costs to print it. It's in that high quality photographic paper, you know.
I've seen those books,
free stacks of them, and the thing is about half an inch thick. and beautiful photographs in it, but who is putting the money to give these things away for free? Well, normally it's like a $10 or $15 magazine when I've seen them in that quality.
There are so many products now. You can go to the hippie food store, and I go to a co-op, and they have got a whole shelf of keto stuff, keto cups and keto this and keto that, and just hilarious.
And that's a question would be good to ask Ray Pete, because I'm asked about this. If you want to sop up ammonia, you can use the ketones in the potato to make protein out of the ammonia in your body. But when I told someone about that for their kidney disease, which that the ammonia is a problem, they said the doctor says potatoes have potassium in, it's not allowed on our diet. That would be a really good question for Ray Pete, because of that, I won't recommend the potato broth to people who have kidney problems until I get that straight.
Oh, yeah, maybe, I'll email you after the show. Maybe you can give me a few cheater notes for the show, some ideas I can talk to Ray about, because you got some curious things there. Yeah, that'll be fun. How about this one? Does Adam have any new information or thoughts other than what we know on the causes and cures of ringing in the ears? How about a deep humming in the ears? Are these sounds rooted in the brain? So,
Yes, no, maybe. I'm looking for my list of, I have a list in one of my newsletters from that has about 30 causes of it. But here's what Swami Nitty Gritty told me. He told me that I was with him when someone had a ringing, and he said, is it in the right ear or the left ear? And they said, in the right ear. Then he said, I wouldn't fix you if I could, because it took me 18 years to get that ringing in my right ear. And indeed, if you have it in the left ear, it can mean high blood pressure and a variety of things. If you have it in the right ear, then it's a spiritual call to arms, and then it will go to the center of the forehead. I met a chiropractor in Oregon who complained with the same thing. He had the ringing. He said, it's not in my ears. It's in the middle of my forehead. And I told him the same thing Swami Nitty Gritty told me, except I haven't got that in my right ear or my forehead, but that chiropractor did.
Yeah.
So, in other words, it's a yes, no, maybe. It can be a problem in the left ear, but if it's in the right ear, or if you concentrate, you can usually focus it and send it from the left ear over to the right ear. If you can do that, then it's perfectly normal, and it gives you creativity and genius. My same high school buddy, Frank Broski, has it roaring all night, so he leaves the television on full blast to drown out the roaring. And because of that roaring, his daughter is able to predict earthquakes, and he has what you'd call supernatural abilities from it.
Yeah. So, well, I would good, very well said. Okay, so let me add a few things to this, because I'm an Eckankar guy, right? So what we do is I would encourage your friend to kind of go into the roaring rather than try to block it out, because the roaring of the sea is actually a sound of the astral plane, right? Now, the astral plane is not, that's not the highest plane out there. I mean, it's low in the totem pole, but you can play around, and no wonder he's got some kind of premonitions, or, you know what I'm saying? And the humming sound is actually way up there in the Alaya Lok, which is that's the sound, is the humming. So this person could actually be kind of being tuned in on a much higher level, and rather than to try to get rid of the humming sound, you might want to go into it, just really get into it and see where it takes you.
That's my understanding of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
My friend Frank Broski, by the way, besides he has supernatural abilities, he didn't just invent Bondo. He's invented all kinds of other things and is one of the most creative people I've ever met in my life.
And this is the fellow with the roaring sound.
Yeah, definitely the roaring. And I didn't know that. When we were high school buddies together hanging out, he never told me about that. But then one time I visited him, and at that point I was meditating 4 hours a night. So I'm waiting for him to go to sleep, and we're watching television. I knew he had to leave for work at 4 in the morning. He drove 120 miles across L.A. to go to work every day. And we're sitting watching television, and finally I said, "You don't go to sleep? You're going to go right to work now?" He said, "Well, I can't sleep in the silence because of the ringing in my ears. It's so loud that it's like a siren."
Yeah.
Then I put together the idea of his creativity, looked up my chart on those levels, and found out that if you press the back of your head, you can increase the sound current. There is a ski slope in the back of the skull. Now, my friend Frank Broski looked for that. He couldn't find the ski slope that he felt in the back of his own head. It's not in the anatomy books. And when I looked it up, it said on my chart, push that to increase the sound current. So he was trying to get a machine with a 40-pound pull and pull it back into round. And of course, he couldn't do it. So he's stuck with his genius.
There's all kinds of sounds on the other planes. The earth sound is thunder. Well, we can get that, right? And for the astral plane, it's the roar of the sea. On the causal plane, it's tinkling of bells. On the mental plane, it's running water. And the buzzing of bees is on the etheric plane or subconscious. And a single note of a flute is the soul plane, and then they go up from there, and the humming sound is up even above the soul plane. So, you know, yeah, people hear all kinds of sounds, and sometimes they're just really kind of God talking to you, you know. So don't try to get rid of them all the time.
I met a Swami who could not only hear him, he could play him. He could actually sing out of his tailbone, out of the top of his head. Swami Nadi Brahmananda, out of India, who I had the pleasure to meet, the master of the Nadis. And Adon Olay met him too, under very unusual circumstances.
That's kind of fun. One second. Phone calls come first. Let's see. Good morning.
Hello, good morning, gentlemen.
There's no gentleman here, just Patrick and Adam.
Hey, Patrick, did you do your liver gallbladder flush?
I didn't.
I thought so.
I did this Epsom salts. I did the coffee enema. I was getting all ready to go. It was about 9 o'clock. I got a little behind, 10 o'clock. And he goes, you know, and I was going to bed. And, you know, the last thing I want to do right now is drink a half a cup of olive oil. So I just went to bed. I just didn't get into it, Robert. It was just one of those things, you know. I knew what was right for my body, and it just wasn't time.
Well, I've been prepared, and I'm a little leery too. Adam, what's your take on the liver gallbladder flushes? Have you ever done them, and what do you think about them? Can you get that gallstone stuck in there, and we're going to die, or what's up?
What comes out is not gallstones usually. They dissolve afterwards, and it actually is margaric acid. We make olive oil in our own body by doing that. But it does clear the gallbladder still.
It'll clear it out, yeah.
That flush, and they've actually avoided the surgeon's knife.
So I think it's a yes, no, maybe, Robert. It's just you got to use your own intuition if you really think you want to get some out, you know?
Yeah, I didn't understand.
I've done it
Adam
five Gansel. Times, and it's not very pleasant.
I'm sorry, Robert. Say again.
Yeah, Adam, I didn't understand Adam's answer. Let me play back what I heard.
Okay.
He said that it's not stones, which Patrick would disagree with, because he said he.
Well, just leave me out of it for now. Just talk to Adam here. Just talk to Adam. Don't complicate me.
Let me finish. All right. Finish. Don't interrupt me. And then Adam said that it won't clear out the stones, but it clears out the gallbladder. So if there's stones in a gallbladder, so you made contradicting terms. It won't take out the stones, but it'll clear out the gallbladder. Help me out there.
How could it do that, Adam, if there's no stones?
No, that's not what I said.
Okay.
I said that it will clear an occasional stone out, but it will keep a person from gallbladder surgery, because the trick is it gets stuck in the opening to the gallbladder, and mostly it actually gets stuck in the duct, which is the most dangerous place for it. Many times you can pass a stone that's as big as an egg, but those can be dangerous because they get stuck and kill people at the ileocecal valve, as you go through the old medical books that they would tell you this. Now, the margaric acid, I've done that gallbladder flush over and over and got enough gallstones out to fill my entire lung cavity from doing it.
Did you really?
And so obviously, I didn't store thousands of them. And why did they dissolve? A gallstone is like something you keep forever. You can wear it as a necklace. Those gallstones, as hard as they came out of me, they sat in the cup and they turned to liquid within a couple of days. If they don't, then they truly are gallstones. And gallstones come in orange, black, white, all the colors of the universe.
Right.
Look them up in the medical book and not the stuff that comes out of the butt, which is margaric acid formed from olive oil, as the Mayo Clinic proved and many other authorities years ago. And people are being deceived by it.
Yeah.
But recommending it, do it, do it, do it.
But it could be both ways, too. Like I've told this story, you know, about 5 years ago, these things were definitely hard, right? You know, they came out and they were hard. They would plink on a plate if you dropped it. But
that's a gallstone.
Yeah, that's a stone. But
if it stays.
But even that, if it was in there, maybe if you did certain things, a lot of apples and apple juice or whatever, maybe even that would dissolve it in the gallbladder. So it doesn't mean it wasn't a stone just because it dissolved. It could be both, right?
It can be. Now, the ones that come out when they're green like that, that is obviously
Yeah, that's olive. Probably fat. Yeah. That's
when they come out orange and other colors, then you probably got gallstones. If you look at the color of what they look like in medical books, or see them like at autopsies and things like that.
Yeah.
But you can clearly see what the stones look like. They're not green cholesterol like that, like looking like olive oil, basically. And like I say, the Mayo Clinic and a whole bunch of people have shown that. However, you can get them out. Yes, you can get them out. And it will at least move the stone out of the gallbladder. You can get these stones, by the way, intestinal stones, liver stones.
Kidney
these stones,
stones
can occur in various places. I started turning to stone at one point. I read a comic book about a guy who turned to stone, and guess what? I had a disease called sclerodoma, but a localized version. So I went to the doctor. He took basically a soldering iron and burned the quarter-sized hardening out of my foot, and it never came back. And I stopped reading comic books about people turning to stone.
Well, Robert, sounds like, you know, you've probably done enough of this phosphoric acid. It'd probably be pretty safe for you to do it. Might as well give it a go.
Yeah, here's what's going on with me. From ultrasound, when I had the liver issues, they do ultrasound and they can see gallstones and kidney stones. So I have confirmed kidney stones and gallstones. And I did have a kidney stone attack probably 20 years ago. So lately, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I started getting a lot of pain in my back, gallbladder, a lot of belching. And probably because I'm eating way too many fatty foods before I go to bed. And I'm doing everything, if you look on a gallbladder kidney stone diet, you're not supposed to do. Milk, coffee, eggs, such and such. So that said, what I've been doing from what I know is hitting it hard with fresh-made chunk of piedra, the stone breaker, a lot of sauerkraut juice and tomato juice, which Dr. Tennant says is one of the best things for it. And then also doing the fast food. So the pain has subsided and going down. But when Adam mentioned stuff like you can die and kill you and those things still, you know, he did kind of allude to that a little bit, you know, so it's kind of a...
You can't die from that. I've never heard of anyone dying from that.
No, no, we've never heard of anybody dying from doing a flush, Robert.
I know people have done thousands of them, and authorities who recommend various forms of gallbladder flush are from Dr. Jensen, on and on. People have done it, and I never heard of a single person that died from one of those flushes. And I know people who have avoided the surgeon's knife.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to make sure my wife's home.
Okay.
Make sure, you know, everything's okay just in case I do need to get rushed to the emergency room.
Probably not. You'll probably be fine.
Let me just touch on another note real quick. Adam, my wife has a reunion, and they want to go to California. It's going to be somewhere in L.A. And my wife wants to see the Pacific Coast Highway. And then I'm hearing about all these floods and slides on the news. Any ideas on, is that doable? I mean, I don't want to go all the way up to Portland, down to San Diego, but give me some ideas on how I can just please my wife, see a little bit of the Pacific Coast Highway, and what would you suggest? And is it that bad out there, or what's going on?
In this kind of rain, we have highways closed all over the place. We have one here closed for a month right near us. We have, I would say, about 100 highways are closed. With different openings. Malibu is particularly susceptible along one there. But what I would do is get on KTLA News, one of those channels, and look for current information on one. One might be clear right now, but it is often down a lot. However, it's such an important artery, they usually try to get that fixed. So if you come and no rain is due in, where you can get a fresh slide coming down, and it is clear according to KTLA, that's the operant station, then you should be okay.
Do your flush first in case
you have. Can I come pick you up, get a bushel of oranges, and we'll go take a ride? You can show me.
There you go. Thanks. By the way,
thanks for calling, Robert.
If you come to LAX, you don't have to go on Highway 1 at all. You can avoid it entirely by going 101 where you're going, or any place down in L.A. is free of Highway 1.
Yeah, we knew a lot of people over the years, too, for Robert and others, you know, who are concerned. Dr. David Jubb and Annie Jubb, and I mean, they used to do gallbladder flush parties, you know, and people would come over, and they wouldn't even do any prep, you know. They would just do them, and I never heard of years and years of people doing them, never heard anybody really had a big problem. But then again, you know, it's your body, and anything could happen, so you just have to take responsibility when you start poking around with it. So, you know.
The worst I know happened to my co-author of Yes, No, Maybe. When we did the gallbladder flush the first time, she had such a violent reaction to the olive oil, she coughed up blood.
Oh, my God. No kidding.
And then she did it again. She said, my co-author is a stick-to-it type person.
Yeah.
So they said, I don't care, I'm doing it. And she did it. And so she got those margaric acid critters out of her, too.
I may do one in a few days. I don't know. I just didn't feel like doing it. It was, I think, Friday night. And I don't know. It's just one of those things, you know. You know how it is when you know you don't need to do something. Just, okay, I'm going to bed. I don't care about drinking that olive oil.
I hate that flush. I've done it 4 or 5 times, and I hate it. I even tried it one time. I figured the Edgar Cayce one of eating the whole apples would work.
Yeah.
And by the way, that doesn't work. I ate 80 apples in 3 days.
Wow, you're so crazy. Hey, come on. You can't eat 80 apples. You would die or something. Apple poisoning.
I was visiting my relatives in Florida, and unfortunately, they were having all these feasts and everything, and they thought I was nuts, which I probably was, eating 80, actually, I think it was 82 apples in 3 days. Not a single stone came out, and I gave up.
You know, Dr. Kuhn, who got me kind of thinking about it, he said he's done about, what, 35 or 40, he said?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, never had a problem. And he said that the phosphoric stuff in the phosphorus in the apples helps to keep the arteries clean and the stones from forming. Maybe that's why you wrote in an apple a day keeps the doctor away.
Well, phosphoric acid is an enzyme that breaks down the apple, so it is an enzyme that's used to breaking things down, so it could work on the gallstones. It's plausible. Usually the malic acid and other things are credited, but no one really knows for sure, and the medical profession doesn't want us to know these kind of things,
and they don't
let us know. Yeah. No research money goes toward that, only towards statins and their drugs.
Yeah, yeah, he had recommended, and Dr. Jubb also, there's a little product called Phosfood, you know, which is just phosphoric acid, doing 90 drops a day for 5 days before you do the flush, and so Dr. Jubb recommended that 10 years ago, and here's an email. I have your book, and I've been following Solar Nutrition for over a year, and I still have the same some conditions such as arthritic swollen knuckles and contracture of the mid-joint finger on the right hand. My skin is always dry and becoming transparent on my hands. Over 10 years, I was told by an acupuncturist I had Sjogren's syndrome, like Venus Williams, and she cured herself by going vegan. Should I become vegan?
Yeah, I'd have to know what was being eaten, because obviously people get cured of things for different reasons. And also, when people say they're eating solar, a lot of times when I question them about what they are eating, it turns out they're not really eating solar. And also, some things take time. It takes time to get things. It took me 24 years to get rid of my eyeglasses. And that's another thing that's happened to me over the years. In 1987, either my arms had to get longer or my eyes had to get stronger, because I couldn't read anything without glasses.
Yeah.
So, of course, I lost many pair by waking up in the morning and putting my hand on them, and also from hugging people when, you know, you wear them around the neck and they get crushed. And now I can go to the bookstore or read labels and things without glasses. It just reverted in 2011 for some reason, after 1987 when it first happened.
Your eyes are getting stronger. Your eyesight's getting stronger.
Yeah, that's right. You know, some things right away. When I went on solar, I had health improvements immediately. And then some things I actually would get off it. After 10 years, I'd say, this isn't working for me. Right. Then I'd get off it and see how worse I felt and get back on it really quickly. So I've been on it now since 1975. Actually, maybe a little earlier, because a chiropractor friend of mine named Steve Shiver got me on solar nutrition before I even met Adano for about a year, I believe. So it's worked for me.
Well, if you're eating a more vegetarian diet, it's pretty easy. I mean, it's not like you got to do a lot of, organizing to eat solar, right? Because vegetables are neutral.
Ray Kate even says that if you avoid omega-3s entirely, then you can be a total vegan, because you can make all your oleic acid and your fats out of sugar anyway. But if you are eating omega-3, he believes that you need a certain amount of protein. Now, I see examples like the Tarahumara Indians who just eat corn and things like that. And the Turban Tornado, he's 107 years old and still running. You know, he was running the Olympics when he was 101 or two. He opened up the Olympics, I think, in 2000. And he seems to be doing well without any meat. So I think it varies between people. But I've come to the conclusion that I walk big circles around omega-3s whenever possible. And otherwise, I think there's a variety. Some people might do good in keto. You know, keto does cure certain conditions. It's just that no one has ever done keto before, except in concentration camps. So keto may work. We won't know for another 50 years when we see how long people are going to be living from keto.
Yeah, we just don't know. Yeah, we don't know.
I just eat it on time.
Hi, Adam and Patrick. We know the body has reflex points to the organs, and we know the PUFAs create lipofuscin inside the body. Does the location of the brown spots that show up on the outside of the body give indication to the particular organ being affected on the inside of the body? Good question.
Now, there's a smart person,
a good question, Now, most of the brown spots on people who are doing, I guess from PUFAs, I don't know where, on people on their hands, right? You look at folks who are 60, 70, 80, and they're all full of little brown spots all over their hands. And those are PUFAs, right, from the liver?
Most of them. Now, you can get melanin and other type of bruises and things like that. A true lipofuscin will glow in the dark under ultraviolet or black light. Unless they get old, then they turn black and brown. That's why some people will actually pee out lipofuscin and it will glow in the dark. And some people will sweat. One way is the apocrine glands, the ones that have the sexual hormones. They will get rid of lipofuscin. So people will notice in their armpits they will have black sweat, brown sweat, yellow sweat, orange sweat, all the different colors of lipofuscin and its various stages. As it gets diffused, it turns black and it won't glow in the dark anymore.
So is there a difference in the organs where the yellow fat could be forming if we see spots on the face or the hands to this emailer's question?
Yes, a lot of people, in fact, a well-known proponent of DNA has lots of those lipofuscin spots on his forehead. I won't mention his name, but it's because lipofuscin needs two things. It needs a trauma and or sunshine or something like that, something to challenge it. So if I injure myself, I'm likely to get lipofuscin there because the cell has been damaged in its function, and so the lipofuscin will form in these points. Now, these forms indeed relate to acupuncture points. You can't do anything outside your body without inside. Hence, death touch. Death touch is a very real thing. You can hit a person in a certain acupuncture point and kill them as much as a year later. A lot of people do it, like an uncle of mine. He hit his heart finger with a hammer, and he didn't yell enough, and he had a heart attack a year later from hitting that death touch point at the end of his pinky. I think it's heart 9.
Okay, so how about body parts and spots?
Yeah, body parts, and that goes to those spots too. And those spots will then appear in other places, because if a person has it in their skin, they have it in their brain, they have it in iris. It's called alien pigment in the iris, like in iridology. It's in the brain, it's in the liver, it's in the heart. Brown heart disease, blue kidney disease, black kidney disease,
AF50
effect, etc.
So the organs don't put them in a certain spot on the outside.
Oh, yeah, that can
okay, I'm trying to get at that. So what are they? That's what the emailer wants to know.
What do you mean, what are they?
In other words, if you see the brown spots on the back of the hand, what organ is that? If you see them on the face, what organ is that? That's what she wants to know, I think.
Well, you got to go with each point and see what it relates to.
Ah.
So like lung 6 might be different than lung 5, and large intestine 5 will be different than large intestine 4.
Oh, so it's on the meridian and not necessarily on the... on the body part itself?
Well, the body part can be also affected, because if you have a liver point, you're likely to get liver reflexes in places. So you have to know the microsystems.
Oh.
Dale called himself the father of microsystems. And actually, if that's true, Adonal Lay was the grandfather of microsystems, because we have a little man in our face. The shoulders are at the gallbladder points. We have a little man in our teeth. Obviously, the teeth are all connected to acupunctures. We have a little man in the iris. That's the iris. The nose is an entire system. The ears are three systems. You have the upside-down baby, you have the whole man, and you have the man's face, depending on if you use magnetics or you use color or you use harder pressure. Harder pressure is the most well-known system. I'm aware of about 40 or 50 systems off the top of my head, and I used to teach applied reflexology systems for the entire body. I would introduce people with the feet reflexes, then go to the hand reflexes, the ear reflexes, the teeth reflexes, the nose reflexes, etc. You get the idea.
So just in general, when we see many, many elderly people with these brown spots all over their hand, these are liver spots that are just kind of hanging out there just because they need some place to pop, or not? So not necessarily the back of the hand to the liver is what I'm hearing you say. Is that right?
It means their mitochondria in places in their body can be 40% full of junk.
Ooh.
And they used to think that this junk was like, say I'm in this room and I got all the, I can still get on the computer because I got the junk stacked. But you give the lipofuscin iron, manganese, copper, zinc, and some other heavy metals, including aluminum, it's like giving them an assault rifle.
Wow.
It shows they're not passive. You give them other things, and lipofuscin gets violent. It's not just a passive junk that sits there. Even, what's his name, Aubrey de Grey, the guy who's into trying to cure lipofuscin with genetics, lots of luck. You're not going to do it. Basically, you have to detox your body.
It's detoxification, total body detox, and then you're working on kidney, liver, colon, everything, just moving everything out.
That's right, and it's work, because some authorities say you can't get lipofuscin out. And to me, that's, again, medical mythology.
Yeah.
It's just that they're tough to get out. You know, when you're, you know, your age spot is there, and it goes away, you know it goes away. Now, Ray Peet has given ways to do it externally, and they can work internally, like niacinamide. You rub a paste on the spot. Obviously, if you're taking niacinamide, you get it in coffee. It's going to help you erase them inside the brain, inside the iris, inside places like that. So also vitamin E can help, and various nutrients can help. And, of course, avoiding the omega-3s so they don't have a backup force. In other words, if they run out of recruits, there's no more yellow fat disease.
Oh, so actually Ray Peet has talked about using a niacinamide supplement and actually making a paste out of it for externally on the brown spots?
He has. He's also mentioned for some of them rubbing, I believe it was tequila or gin. I forget the alcohol.
I'll ask him about that tomorrow.
If they're newly formed.
That's funny.
By the way, I approach yellow fat disease and other problems like a sculptor. Most people do like an artist. I add dabs of paint. I add a supplement or something. To me, it's what you take out of it to make a sculptor. A statue is what you remove. So I believe in removing the problem in the first place, and then the body will take care of itself at that point, because it's designed to be perfect.
Yeah.
Only our minds mess it up. Can make it immortal, diamond body lifestyles, or it can phase it out really quickly through a living to die attitude.
I'm with you, kid. Adam Bergstrom, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. Adam's here the first and the third Monday, because it's so much fun. Let's do a quick little break, and then we'll wrap it up, get the rest of the emails. Dr. Levy was a big proponent, for what it's worth, cool guy, with the vitamin D3K2. He mentioned that quite often during the show, which was, I don't know when it was, Thursday, something like that. Daniel Vitalis has got a great one, really nice one, varying super ingredients, very clean, in Myron Glass, like everything that Daniel does, is vitamin D3K2 on Anister Thrival Link. Now, that's the same place where you get colostrum and you get the elk velvet antler and pine pollen and the shaga and the reishi, Daniel Vitalis, Sir Thrival Link. And Dr. Cowan is really big on colostrum. He's been writing a lot about it to healing and sealing up the gut. So if you think you got some leaky gut thing, get some colostrum from Daniel Vitalis and try it and see how you do. Don't forget, we have the Pure Fresh Aloe, which I think is amazing, from Stockton Aloe One on our website. If you want to get some aloe, this is the best place to do it. And if you want to get some really cool things for your kidney, which does a lot of cool things, listen to this product. Previously, with our friend Brandon Amalani of Shen Blossom.
A good example of this also is like the Hoshuwu formula. That is that's a new one that came out. It's really good because it's a blood builder. A lot of people don't understand that Hoshuwu is actually toxic if it's not prepared correctly. So I wanted to come out with one that not only features the Hoshuwu as the king herb in the formula, but it's prepared of a minimum of 14 days. Usually we try and get 20, 21 days of cooking it. So you can think of it as like it's in a slow cooker with black beans. And it's basically just cooking down and deactivating some of those liver toxic compounds. So we do use that as like the bulk of the formula, but we basically put a lot of like mature ginseng root, like in our root extract. We have the fermented and hydrolyzed pearl powder, reishi stem, and it's got shu di hong, which is like a Romania type family. We got both the prepared warm stuff and then the cool stuff to kind of balance it out in a sense so it doesn't become sticky. If you get a good quality hoshuwu that's properly prepared, it definitely has some invigorating qualities to it and makes you feel relaxed, but yet fully vigorous and energized.
Now, that's the kind of hoshuwu that you would like, right? Really nice products, as you can hear. If you'd like to order hoshuwu or the other products, click on Shen Blossom right there on the front page, OneRadioNetwork.com.
Awimawa, 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 awimawa. In the jungle, the mighty jungle, the lion sleeps tonight. In the jungle, the quiet jungle, the lion sleeps tonight.
Well, this is OneRadioNetwork.com. Boy, Adam Bergstrom, I hear that song, and that was my junior year in high school on the jukebox in cafeteria. We played that every 10 minutes. Oh, my God.
I loved it, and it may be, according to what I heard, one of the best spiritual teachers in the world, Rabbi Michael Shapiro, was a member of that group in his youth.
Oh, the Tokens. No kidding. I'm checking it, but I think it was 1963. I was a junior or a senior. Let's see what year it was. Oh, 62. Okay.
Goes back a ways. I love that song too. I love it.
Yeah, that's just a great one. No, actually, it says released 1961. Oh,
I think Rabbi Michael Shapiro has about hundreds of CDs out where he starts all of his lectures with the guitar, and then he ends them with the guitar too, and then gives a spontaneous lecture hundreds of times. I've been with him in person and done workshops. He's an amazing human being, right up there with the Donald Lay and Master Chen.
Michael Shapiro.
Michael Shapiro, yeah. I think he's retired as a rabbi now. He lives in Paradise Valley, where my co-author of Yes, No, Maybe lives.
I'll be done. Here's an email. It was on your 10:30:17 show with Carolyn Borman, where she mentioned the cleanest source of thyroid glandulars. You ordered them as postcards. Oh, that's it. From Z Web Media, Net Postcards, and we have a little clip explaining about it. This guy's so cool that sent this in, Steve. Thanks, Steve. By the way, so I'm going to put this on the show page if you want to get some of this thyroid. I think the fellow's in Vietnam or Thailand. By the way, the pharmacy website that Dr. Ray Pete told you about has drastically lower cost medications. It's from PharmaciaDelNino.mx, and we put that link up on the page before. I mentioned this to someone on social media who complained that her insulin medications cost $807, but was only $70 at this site. And later I noticed that my post was deleted from Facebook. Oh, wow.
Doesn't surprise me.
Isn't that amazing? So we'll put all these links on Adam's show page for today, and you guys can do that. That's crazy.
They kicked Vibram Gal off Facebook.
Did they really kick her? Why'd they kick her off?
Yeah, our friend Daniela wonders what happened, why she can't find her. That's why. Well, somebody didn't like something she said about health, I choose to remember what it was, and so I think they reported her that Vibrant Gal is not her real name. Now, there's a lot of people not using their real name on there, and they didn't get kicked off. So she figured, what the heck, I have another business on Facebook, and she goes to Twitter and whatever the other one is you go to.
Instagram
now, so yeah. That's where you can find Vibrant Gal.
All kinds of stuff. Okay, maybe consuming regular white sugar is contributing to the raise of the pulse, not the highest choice ever with the amazing fruits and carb foods available, including honey. Maybe oranges and other sweet fruit, honey, carb foods are enough for Adam currently, and he doesn't need cobalamin tonic coffee in particular as much as the coffee is contributing to the raise in pulse? Question mark?
I've been drinking. Oops, you weren't finished. Sorry.
No, that's it. So I don't really understand this question. Do you?
I think he's saying that the white sugar and the cobalamin tonic is raising my
pulse.
But I have drank cobalamin tonic since 19 85, when I first started drinking coffee, 85, 86, 87. I've been drinking it every day since then, drinking up to a quart or more in the morning, and have not had a single slice. Then before I started eating the white sugar, I ate the oranges, and it went up to 72. Now, after that, I did add the sugar, so the sugar could have added it. And I certainly am not recommending people go out there and start eating white sugar like I am. I am an experiment. I love to experiment. Yeah. That's my gig.
Yeah. So that's what this person is saying. Maybe at the end of your experiment, you could replace the white sugar stuff. But no, but your pulse rate has gone up way before you start doing the sugar experiment.
Oh, yeah. It was happened from the orange. When I eliminated the omega-3s and I ate the orange, then I went up to 72 and even 75. And it disturbed me because I was so used to being 60 and bragging about it. You know, mine is 60. Right. What is yours? 72. Mine is 60.
I know. Ray Pete's always been a fan of suggesting that a little bit higher was a more healthier position. So we'll see. You know,
yep.
About that.
Look at Swami Nitty Gritty. He said it's healthy to be 60 over 20.
What's 60? What do you mean 60 over 20?
60 over 20. To have a blood pressure of 60 over 20 and have a pulse down to 20.
Oh, really? Oh, is that what he said?
He's a yogi. You know, Ray Pete does not know yogis, and he probably wouldn't believe the story about the guy who held his breath in a tomb for 40 days, as was reported by the British military. And that's okay. I don't blame him.
I see what you're saying. It's just a different, yeah.
And I just came across all of this stuff. It's my freaking karma.
So that's what you're alluding to with me because of my spiritual work and all the contemplations and meditation and I do could be why I'm 60 and just stay there.
I know people are perfectly healthy to have 60, including my co-author of Yes, No, Maybe. Now, what she might learn from Ray Pete, though, is that the green salad she's eating are actually causing problems.
Yeah, boy, you know, I know a lot of vegetarians, though, and vegans, they can eat a huge bowl of a green salad, huge bowl of it. Boy, if I did that, I'd be in a fetal position. I don't know, I just couldn't. I never could eat that much raw stuff. Interesting.
I have a friend of mine from Canada that is a vegan, and she eats a head of lettuce, of iceberg lettuce, at a setting.
An iceberg lettuce, really?
Wow. It would take me a week to eat it. In fact, I travel with her, and I told her, I'm going to do veganism on solar time. So I did, but for lunch, I couldn't eat but slices of that lettuce was my tomato, and of course no cheese and anything like that. I did the veganism strict for an entire month and did fine with it.
Well, we are little all unique pumpkins, right? What are you going to do? You know, it's just everybody's body is so different.
We can't be Mr. Eats-All, who took him 2 years to eat a Cessna. He ate shopping carts, razor blades, a coffin, and all kinds of metal, and he was digesting it. We're not supposed to ingest. Some people say, unless it's organic in food, you can't digest it. She did, and he did. And a high school buddy of my son, he would intimidate people. He'd walk into a bar, and someone would glare at him. He'd order a half pint of booze in the bottle, drink the bottle down, eat the bottle, and glare at the person. And he never got in a fight.
That's interesting. It's 11:35 Central Time. Not that matters. Steve wants to know, Patrick, how do you take your pulse? I just do, I got a stopwatch. You know, I'm always timing different scenes in movies, you know, because of my screenwriting stuff. And so I got a stopwatch around all the time. And I just do a stopwatch and then count my pulse for like 15 seconds and then hit the stopwatch. And you can see if you have 15 beats in 14 seconds or 15 beats in 16 seconds or 15. You know, I do notice it, what's really interesting, even after I eat, that I can do, I'll do like, just for fun, I'll do like 15 beats in 14 seconds where it actually speeds up a fraction from eating food. But that seems like that would be normal, wouldn't it? Maybe your digestion is just juicing up your pulse rate a little bit.
That used to be a classic allergy test.
Yeah, that used to be a classic. Yeah. It used to be an allergy test. I wonder if that's, you know, mine doesn't go up at all, but much.
My Mickey Mouse, my test, by the way, we use the oven timer. I set it for 1 minute and 11 seconds, and then so I can get situated. And then as soon as it gets to 60, I yell to Vibrant Gal, now! And then I say, stop, and we get the rating for the whole 60 seconds.
Oh, you do it for the whole 60 seconds.
The whole 60 seconds. Oh. I'm a hardcore guy.
Hardcore guy, yeah. I like to test after, you know, you rebound with the weights and you really get your heart rate up there, you know, and then I just test it for like 10 seconds and times six, and you can get a pretty good reading of how fast it's going, because it's going so fast that you couldn't even do it for 60 seconds. It'd be like crazy.
I think it's a good idea. It gets us back in the body. We're so used to getting a test outside of us, and there's many tests we can do for ourselves. Sure. In fact, you want to find out if you have sugar diabetes, and I don't, because I can tell, because I can pee around the ants, and they don't come for my pee. That's how you tell if you have diabetes.
You're a real scientist, dude. I tell you what. That's funny. Here's an email. Could bears be more immune to the yellow fat disease because they hibernate and are basically fasting the whole time?
According to Ray Pete, no, but I'm a big fan of hibernation in a lot of ways. Ray Pete is not. He says it's like something that's a problem. But estivation during the daily and hibernation I see has yogic qualities. And so I think that is definitely possible, that the hibernation of the bear and other things can be happening. And by the way, different creatures have different sensitivities to yellow fat disease. Mink are particularly susceptible. Cats are particularly susceptible. Horses are particularly susceptible. Cows are not. Crocodiles are the worst than alligators. They will rubberize within a week. They're so susceptible. Wow. Human beings are someplace in the middle. And also depending on whether you're black, red, gray, yellow, whatever you are, has a factor in how resistant you are to yellow fat disease too. Melanin, for one thing, actually can offer protection against liposuction.
How do horses get too much omega-3?
Grass.
Grass. Well, yeah, but that's what they do for a living. I mean, come on.
When horses were not pastured, they had other foods, you know. They ate foods besides grass. And cows in Arizona, they don't eat grass, they eat brush. And also, different grasses are different. Now, many of these animals know the difference. But say a horse is given a Kentucky bluegrass. What's he going to do? He can't go out the fence.
Yeah, he doesn't go out to eat and go to Mickey D's or anything. He just eats. But I mean, isn't grass a natural food for, because horses were wild at one point, weren't they?
Which of the 2,000 natural grasses and which of the 500 genetically modified grasses are we talking about?
Oh, okay. I got you. Yeah.
So it's different. That's why fescue grass gives necrotic fat disease from the palmitic acid, not from the DHA. And other ones have no problem. I think alfalfa is supposed to be one of the best ones. Someone told me their horse eats crabgrass. So there's a big variety of what you get. If you eat the wrong grass, if that horse is exposed to flax seed, you've wiped out the horse. And by the way, they recommend flax oil and flax seed for the horses.
Oh, do they
and
really?
And basically they're prematurely aging them. And anyone can find this research. I actually posted on Facebook and other places a picture of what a horse's yellow fat disease looks like. And in the article, they identify it as being highly unsaturated fatty acids, omega-3 fatty acids, linolenic acid.
In animal protein, referring specifically, is animal protein that Adam talks about referring specifically to meat easier to digest, absorb compared to plant protein?
Now, here's the interesting thing, and that Ray Pete may or may not know about. One of the scientists at the Heritage Seed Company, the ones that keep the, you're familiar with them? Anyway, he wrote a book. no one had ever tested for free-form amino acids, the things I sold, injectable-grade free-form amino acids to bodybuilders. They only checked for whole protein, and actually the free-form amino acids are better. Well, it turns out a Burbank tomato has more free-form amino acids than the protein in a beefsteak.
Really?
So I don't know if Pete knows about this, but after reading that book and other information on, I mean, how does a hippopotamus eat, a rhinoceros? It eats trees and it eats grass and it's so strong, elephants, herds of elephants will run from a rogue rhino. And yet they eat trees and grass. They don't eat protein. So we have more abilities even than animals. So I believe, frankly, that we can be vegans, and it's only the toxins in plants that we don't understand that keep us from doing so.
Only the toxin,
omega fatty acids.
You mean, oh, you are not knowing how to eat the plants without being toxic? I kind of lost you on that last part.
Yeah, in other words, the things that the medical mainstream matrix says are good for us.
Yeah.
Nitric oxide, they say it's good for us, it's bad for us. Serotonin, estrogen, all of those things, when we eat those, we're eating the toxins, not the good things. Most antioxidants are now known to be carcinogens or poisons, even tryptophan. You can look it up in the poison magazines. They sell them in the health food store. You go to the poison magazine, and it says that a lot of these create cancer. They're carcinogenic. Well, where's the disconnect on this? Now they're actually saying antioxidants work, this is their excuse, by hormetics. In other words, it's a little bit of poison, and that makes your liver turn on. That's true. If you want to build blood, don't take iron, take arsenic. Then the body goes in defense, and you'll make all the blood cells you need. You don't have to have any iron at all.
Well, I've turned into a gratitudarian. That means that I eat a little bit of everything, and I'm very grateful at every meal.
I love it. There was actually a political party in the 1700s called the Gratitarians.
No
Gratitarians,
kidding.
By the way, and they were criticized, but I think I'm on your side.
That's right. That's right. Do you guys do you eat any grains these days? Not that it matters what you eat, but I'm just kind of curious. Do you eat any grains, rice, or anything like that?
Vibrant Gal eats none at all. Every once in a while, just for a taste, I'll have a little. We have some leftovers. So the ones that I don't find moss in, I have made. I think the last time was a couple of months ago. I had some, what was it?
Millet.
Yeah.
Really good. And millet's one of the better ones. And despite what they say, if you're going to eat a grain, the corn turns out to be the best one, despite all those tests and things. The Tara Humara Indians drink corn liquor, and they can run 425 miles at a time. I'd like to see a long-distance 26-mile marathoner do that.
And they run 400 miles on corn?
That's right, on corn beer.
maybe that's why corn ethanol works for cars, you know. I don't know.
Now, because the Tarahumara Indian eat a few chia seeds, they tried to blame the chia seeds for
it. Yes.
But the corn liquor and the beans. Now, bean power, maybe it made him fart and made him give him some jet propulsion there, but whatever. If you're going for a DHA index, which they say are important for cardiac health, why do the Tarahumara not eat very, very minimum fish, if any, and they have perfect hearts, but they have very low omega-3 indexes.
What do they eat?
They're selling a bit of goods, obviously. And look at desert people, the Apaches, the Bedouins, they didn't have fish, and yet they had the healthiest hearts. Some of the Bedouins would live into their 130s.
What did they eat? What did they eat?
Were amazed.
What did they eat corn? What else did they eat?
No, the Bedouins actually didn't. They ate dates and all kinds of other things. I'm not sure exactly what their diet, but many of these primitive societies that we call primitive ate, guess what? Potatoes, the lowly potato in all of its forms.
I'll be done.
And we had, like in New Guinea, there were 59 varieties of potatoes that they ate, and the only exception, they would eat an occasional human being when they were at war.
I'm trying to cut down on that. These Indians that ran like 400 miles or something, other than the corn liquor, what was their diet?
Let's see, beans? And and they did in your show on January 1st, 2014, Ray Pete goes into what they do to the grains in the 28 to 35 minutes.
Oh, yeah, I'm
going to
get that. Yeah, yeah.
That's what the, though he doesn't mention the tarahumara by names, he mentions what they do in Mexico and how you can make grains healthy. So if you really like your grains,
oh, I'm going to listen
to that. See what they're doing wrong to them. He says it in that 28 to 35 minutes better than any other show. And by the way, your two Ray Pete shows were sterling.
Sterling silver. Oh, that's great. Yeah, I'm going to listen to that because I do. I like some jasmine rice sometimes. It just tastes good to me. Of course, maybe it's all the butter I put on it, but you know.
That's my case too. We love our butter.
Maybe it's like the butter. Good morning. I went to an acupuncturist. She said I had a tight scalp, also losing some hair at the crown, looked up meridians to hair loss, and seems the kidneys, yep, have something to do with hair loss. What do you think, Adam? How to work on the kidneys?
Well, actually, I find that hair loss is more involved with the gallbladder and urinary bladder, according to most acupuncturists I've talked to. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean that this acupuncturist doesn't know something I don't know, because right. I'm not an acupuncturist. But you'll notice that the urinary bladder meridian goes all over the head. The gallbladder meridian goes all over the head. They're more present on the head than any place else. And the urinary bladder and the gallbladder are reflexes to the brain. They are bladders. If you look at your head closely, it's a big bladder. Your kidneys are your ears. The Eustachian tubes connect the brain bladder to the kidneys. And then the esophagus is the ureters. And then the urethra is the esophagus. So we have this reflex system in. Let me see if I remember correctly, with the bladder meridian problem, you have the baldness that goes up the side, and the top type of baldness is the urinary bladder. And that's according to acupuncture journals, which I used to read all the back issues at the UCSB library.
Yeah, I think the kidney hair connection is a Chinese, if I'm not mistaken, Chinese medicine thing. You know, that's been there whole thing for a long time. Whether or not that's accurate, I don't know. But Chinese medicine has got the hair and the kidneys, you know, together somehow.
Yeah, and it could be. And of course, then you want to protect your kidneys. And one way, kidneys are particularly susceptible to yellow fat disease. I hate to keep harping on the same thing, but they are. But they also are susceptible to heavy metals like mercury and cadmium and aluminum and the usual cast of characters. So it's good to be nice to your kidneys.
Yes. And as far as the emotions, I think fear is tied up with kidneys, right? So just don't be afraid.
Yeah. Fear. And fear, as Swami Nitty-Gritty used to say, fear is in the ear. The tone of F particularly makes one afraid. And if you look at the kidney, it's not only a fetus, it is also an ear.
The shape of the ear, right. So fear in the ear.
Your ears are balanced, so one should be slightly higher than the other to compensate for the kidneys, which should be the other way. One is lower than the other on the one side. The left ear should be slightly higher than the right ear, and the left kidney should be slightly lower than the right one. And that compensates for what they call fluid dynamics.
I think there's a lot of movie stars in California that are getting their ears lowered to be even, like you say, but that's not good. Just kidding. Okay, a final one here. Ask Adam before he goes to talk about high blood pressure and ways to lower it. That's a good question. Okay, we'll end with that.
I've had people walk barefoot on gravel. That has a lot to do with it, because the kidney reflexes are at the bottom of the feet. Kidney one is right there in the bottom. Ray Pete has a novel idea that I haven't tried yet. but he simply says, breathe in a paper bag and do that bag breathing like he explained in, I think, your more recent show with him, and that will bring the blood pressure back down to normal. Now, a good friend of mine had high blood pressure, and she quit her job. She had it regularly. Then she quit her job, and it went back to normal. When she went to her doctor accused her of getting her medicine from another doctor because he could not believe that quitting a job could return her blood pressure to normal. But my friend Zan did.
I'll be darned. So
find the engram.
Now, what time would you breathe in the bag if you wanted to do it? Ray Pete kind of lower your blood pressure?
Yeah, now Ray Pete says anytime, but according to Swami Nitty Gritty, you could get a, Vibrant Gal is signaling me here. Salt will bring down the blood pressure too, something else that Ray Pete and other people have said. But back to carbon dioxide, I would do it at night because according to Swami Nitty Gritty, you can have a heart attack. It's a rare chance,
yeah,
but you're more susceptible to it at high noon. But between the hours of 10 and 10, 10 at night till 10 in the morning, you're more on carbon dioxide time. And from 10 in the morning till 10 in the evening, you're on oxygen time. And that fits Ribisi's timetable as much as it does Nitty Gritty's.
Which kind of fits in if you do more Buteyko breathing kind of thing at night. And that increases carbon dioxide, right?
And that's why these days I sleep like a chicken. I sleep with my head under the blankets, which I never did before. And just like Ray Pete says, you get accustomed to it. At first, I felt like I was running out of air. And now I'm real comfortable putting my beak right down against the feathers and pulling the covers over my head. And
what does that do in the evening now. And what does that do?
Well, it drops blood pressure, does a whole bunch of things. And again, we're carbon dioxide starved. There are creatures on this earth that live without oxygen. You can substitute sulfur for oxygen, by the way. Probably Sulfur Man knows this. But you can't. There's not a single creature that can live without carbon dioxide, strangely enough. So carbon dioxide, it's been known by a lot of people, is actually the secret of higher brain development. The carbon acts like the lead in a lead pencil, which is actually made out of carbon. You write your thoughts down that way. If you want to be a genius or you want to know mathematical formulas, then just co-opt the carbon in your own carbon dioxide and make carbonic acid out of it.
If you, let's say if you're not breathing out of your mouth at all at night, tape it up or just don't do it, do you get more carbon dioxide by just breathing through your nose?
You can do that, depending on how fast you breathe, but it definitely tends to discourage it. And before Buteyko breathings, they were the American Indians. They deliberately forced the mouth closed from childhood. In almost every tribe that the artist George Catlin went to visit, and George Catlin actually wrote a book about it, about how making sure you nose breathe. Because if you look at a person with their mouth open, they look retarded. And that's because it does affect the brain adversely. Look at people next time you're in a public place and see who has their mouth closed and see who has their mouth open. And frankly, when your mouth is open, you look retarded. So you can actually retard your brain by your body language by keeping your mouth open. And that happens from habit. People in Western society aren't trained to do that. The American Indians always kept their mouth shut. That's why they could see that the white man spoke with forked tongue, because they didn't open their mouth.
I'll be done. So that's why the Indians, and I know other cultures too that did that, where if they see the baby kind of breathing with their mouth open, you know, as they're holding them, they would just gently close their mouth and teach the baby to breathe through their nose.
Right from the birth. The mother would force that mouth closed from birth in teepees. And George Catlin reports many cases of it in his book about that, which was written in something like 1880, before Buteyko was even a glint in his mother's eye.
That's really curious, yeah. Uh-huh. Well, I know also breathing from your mouth at night really messes up your, you know, saliva kind of thing, where you remineralize your teeth at night too, and you get dry and not good, and it can, you know, encourage cavities and stuff. So
even Donald Lay recommended, when you stick your tongue out, make sure there's not an air gap between your lips and your tongue when you do it.
Why not? Yeah. Well, Mr. Adam, we're out of here. Doodle and I are going to go out in the sun for a minute. Boy, it is. I can't wait to get out there and get some sun on my body. Thanks for being here. We had a great time. 3 hours. I don't know how, what happened to that. Last time I looked, it was 9 o'clock, and now it's like 3 hours later. Well, Adam, we love your work. Thank you. Appreciate it. Adam's two websites are solartiming.com and SunSync Nutrition. SunSync is a pay-as-you-go, like $99 for the rest of your life, even if you live 145 revolutions. Who doesn't care? And then the solartiming.com is where he has all of the ebooks, and you get them really nice price, like 10 bucks or something. All kinds of books. What are some of the ones other than yellow fat? I mean, what are some of your ebooks?
I have ones on red light, vitamin D, a bunch of subjects. There's about 30 or 35. And by the way, I do appointments, and those appointments are listed on how to get them on the site also.
On which site? The appointments. Which site?
Solar Time.
So if you want to get a little appointment, and you use Skype or Zoom or something, and
Skype.
Skype is the one
I usually do.
Talk to people. Yeah. Cool. That'd be cool.
Read the body language, you know, body dowsing and things. It's easier with the feet, but and unless a person's a poker player, you're a poker player. You're very hard to read, so I'd have to use your feet.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to come out there and see you in person, so you could, you know, get me drunk first or something. All right, kiddo. Thanks a lot. Say hi to Vibrant Gal. See you soon.
She says hi.
All right. We love you guys. Thanks a lot.
Love you too.
Okay.
Bye bye. Love everybody.
Okay. Bye bye. I will see you tomorrow. I think we're going to talk to Dave Stetzer, pretty sure. If not, we'll have somebody else, but then Ray Pete will be here at 10 o'clock. Thanks for your ongoing support. We're going to do a little sulfur order. If you'd like to get some in, we're going to probably do one this afternoon or tomorrow morning. If you'd like to get some sulfur in there, it's a great product if you haven't tried it. And I appreciate your ongoing support and trusting the different people that we recommend. Look on our website, in our store. We got some really nice products and to play with. And if you're going to spend your money, you might as well know the source, and which is one of our trademarks. Know the source. I love you all very much. Thanks a lot. Pleasure being here. We'll see you tomorrow at 9 o'clock, and may the blessings be.
From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.